We're as baffled as you, Jimmy. But there's never been any sign that the Ramans go in for art. Let's wait until we have some more examples before we jump to any conclusions. The two examples he found at the next crossroads were not much help. One was completely blank, a smooth, neutral gray, hard but slippery to the touch. The other was a soft sponge, perforated with billions upon billions of tiny holes. He tested it with his foot, and the whole surface undulated sickeningly beneath him like a barely stabilized quicksand. At the next crossroads he encountered something strikingly like a plowed field, except that the furrows were a uniform meter in depth, and the material of which they were made had the texture of a file or rasp. But he paid little attention to this, because the square adjacent to it was the most thought-provoking of all that he had so far met. At last there was something that he could understand, and it was more than a little disturbing. The entire square was surrounded by a fence, so conventional that he would not have looked at it twice had he seen it on Earth. There were posts, apparently of metal, 5 meters apart, with 6 strands of wire strung taut between them. Beyond this fence was a second, identical one, and beyond that, a third. It was another typical example of Raman redundancy. Whatever was penned inside this enclosure would have no chance of breaking out. There was no entrance, no gates that could be swung open to drive in the beast or beasts that were presumably kept here. Instead, there was a single hole, like a smaller version of Copernicus, in the center of the square. Even in different circumstances, Jimmy would probably not have hesitated, but now he had nothing to lose. He quickly scaled all 3 fences, walked over to the hole, and peered into it. Unlike Copernicus, this well was only 50 meters deep. There were 3 tunnel exits at the bottom, each of which looked large enough to accommodate an elephant, and that was all. After staring for some time, Jimmy decided that the only thing that made sense about the arrangement was for the floor down there to be an elevator. But what it elevated, he was never likely to know. He could only guess that it was quite large and possibly quite dangerous. During the next few hours, he walked more than 10 kilometers along the edge of the sea, and the checkerboard squares had begun to blur together in his memory. He had seen some that were totally enclosed in tent-like structures of wire mesh, as if they were giant bird cages. There were others which seemed to be pools of congealed liquid, full of swirl patterns. However, when he tested them gingerly, they were quite solid. And there was one so utterly black that he could not even see it clearly. Only the sense of touch told him that anything was there. Yet now there was a subtle modulation into something he could understand. Ranging one after the other towards the south was a series of, no other word would do, fields. He might have been walking past an experimental farm on Earth. Each square was a smooth expanse of carefully leveled earth, the first he had ever seen in the metallic landscapes of Rama. The great fields were virgin, lifeless, waiting for crops that had never been planted. Jimmy wondered what their purpose could be, since it was incredible that creatures as advanced as the Ramans would engage in any form of agriculture. Even on Earth, farming was no more than a popular hobby and a source of exotic luxury foods. But he could swear that these were potential farms immaculately prepared. He had never seen Earth that looked so clean. Each square was covered with a great sheet of tough, transparent plastic. He tried to cut through it to obtain a sample, but his knife would barely scratch the surface. Further inland were other fields, and on many of them were complicated constructions of rods and wires, presumably intended for the support of climbing plants. They looked very bleak and desolate, like leafless trees in the depths of winter. The winter they had known must have been long and terrible indeed, and these few weeks of light and warmth might be only a brief interlude before it came again. Jimmy never knew what made him stop and look more closely into the metal maze to the south. Unconsciously, his mind must have been checking every detail around him. It had noticed, in this fantastically alien landscape, something even more anomalous. About 1/4 of a kilometer away, in the middle of a trellis of wires and rods, glowed a single speck of color. It was so small and inconspicuous that it was almost the limit of visibility. On Earth, no one would have looked at it twice. Yet undoubtedly, one of the reasons he had noticed it now was because it reminded him of Earth. He did not report to Hub Control until he was sure that there was no mistake and that wishful thinking had not deluded him. Not until he was only a few meters away could he be completely sure that life as he knew it had intruded into the sterile, aseptic world of Rama. For blooming here in lonely splendor at the edge of the southern continent was a flower. As he came closer, it was obvious to Jimmy that something had gone wrong. There was a hole in the sheathing that presumably protected this layer of earth from contamination by unwanted life forms. Through this break extended a green stem, about as thick as a man's little finger, which twined its way up through the trelliswork. A meter from the ground, it burst into an efflorescence of bluish leaves, shaped more like feathers than the foliage of any plant known to Jimmy. The stem ended, at eye level, in what he had first taken to be a single flower. Now he saw, with no surprise at all, that it was actually three flowers tightly packed together. The petals were brightly colored tubes about 5 centimeters long. There were at least 50 in each bloom, and they glittered with such metallic blues, violets, and greens that they seemed more like the wings of a butterfly than anything in the vegetable kingdom.